Our conversation this week is with Jeanette Tombaugh of Mountain Peaks Studio. The show is sponsored by Cyberpointers and Sassy Jack Stitchery. Cyberpointers is the online chapter of the American Needlepoint Guild. Meetings are held every other month, January, March, May, July, September, and November, and last for 5 days. The meetings are completely online with the program and chapter business conducted through online access and email. Programs are led by an instructor who is available to respond to comments and questions via email during the meeting. In addition, Cyberpointers provides stitching opportunities through workshops featuring projects by national designers that may not otherwise be available to members. They also offer periodic Zoom lectures. To see upcoming programs, workshops, and lectures, visit the education page on the Cyberpointers website at cyberpointers.org. Membership is open to all ANG members. As we approach the holiday season, you'll find Sassy Jack's to be an excellent source for the threads, cloth, charts, and notions you buy for your own holiday stitching and to give as gifts to friends. Sassy Jack's carries charts from all of the top designers, several lines of threads, and an extensive selection of linen in all thread counts. Always keep in mind that a gift certificate can be the perfect choice for your favorite stitching friends. While supplies last, Sassy Jack's has 3 sales packages that are guaranteed to tempt you. The Sampler Mystery Collection Steel Deal is a curated assortment of 5 sampler or sampler-ish charts, $125 value for $25 until they're all gone. They are also offering 5 cross-stitch charts by popular designers, a $75 value for $20, and 5 charts from the Heartstring Samplery Sunday Stitchers Series, $50 value for $15. Also, Sassy Jack's is now the U.S. distributor of the Yvette Stanton Library of Hardanger and Whitework Books. If there is a book you've wanted, but shipping costs to the U.S. have made you hold off on the purchase, contact Kim and she can put the books you want in the mail today. Make it a habit to visit the Sassy Jack's website at sassyjackstitchery.com and join the Sassy Jack's Facebook page to keep up with all of the upcoming activities. Thanks to Cyberpointers and Sassy Jack Stitchery for sponsoring this week's show. Now please enjoy our conversation with Jeanette Tombaugh. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for the needlework artists. Our artist this week from the Mountain Peaks Studios in Colorado, Jeanette Tombaugh. Jeanette, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Oh boy, we've got some needlepoint to talk about today.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Quite a bit.
Oh boy. Well, the neat thing is usually needlepoint people are counted canvas or painted canvas, and you do all of it.
I do all of it.
Yeah.
That's something that, you know, I've started working on more and more. And in part it's because I do a lot of one-on-one consulting. So I end up doing a lot of consulting and people bring in their canvases. Some of them, I haven't worked on this for 25 years. I want to get back to it. And so I'm going through and looking at what they've done, looking at what the artist has written down for them. I'm almost like a sleuth when it comes to painted canvases. Mm. And I'm also designing stitch guides for painted canvases now and counted.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have anything that's 25 years old that I haven't worked on.
Are you lying?
I'm lying, yes.
Because I know I do.
I'm absolutely lying, yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, the challenge is trying to get threads that no longer exist and trying to match them. And
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah. Long ago, I made sure I bought enough when I bought put together a kit. I made sure I had enough, yeah.
Right, right.
You never know. Right.
But sometimes they get separated. That's the other thing. I had a friend who said she found a canvas and she found her instructions, but she never found the threads that went with those
Yes.
And so I mean, it happens. It happens. It's not just, I'm sure she's not the only one.
It does happen. And I've had those, and I've had where we have some pictures of canvas or, some vague instructions that say use the blue. Well, there's three different kinds of blue. Not sure which one you're wanting there. So it's been challenging, but it's very enjoyable for me.
How has that evolved, the painted canvas thing? Because I mean, when I started, it was basket weave, tent stitch basket weave with wool. So, but it the stitch guides interest me because it to me it's kind of basically making counted canvas out of painted canvas projects. But
Right.
how has that evolved? Is it still a thing today that a lot of people want a stitch guide with their painted canvas? Or,
Yes. Yes. In fact, I write several stitch guides for people who it's client based, but I'm working on two right now, and I'm working on a couple other ones that they want to do basket weave, but then they also want to do decorative stitches, and I have to figure out what stitches would go with that. I have, someone who did this really nice flower monogram, but then we incorporated other decorative stitches, and so I wrote. The flowers were done in basket weave, but then I wrote other things to go, including on that, to in background stitches and various other stitches. But yes, people are still wanting those.
Is it a situation where they want to collaborate with you because of your skill, or is it just tell me what to do?
Both. It's a
Okay.
combination of both. And the consulting has opened up a whole new world that I actually work with someone. They come to usually a stitching shop. We sit down, we look at the piece, and we figure out the colors. And then I try by talking through it with them, kind of doing like some personal psychology. I try talking through what kind of stitches they like or what they're looking for. I've got some people who just want to do basket weave, but then maybe just do a background stitch differently. So it's a world of both, actually. It's a very interesting concept that I'm doing right now.
Yeah, I think painted canvases sometimes can be intimidating. They're so beautifully painted, and you don't want to take away from the beauty of the what's already on there, but you kind of want to do something besides basket weave and use some of the fun threads. I mean, that's the other for me, the draw is how can I use these fun fibers that are have been released, you know?
So a lot of times, like I'm thinking to one of them that I'm doing, it's called Warm Me Up, and it's a basket, it's a cup, and there's a whole series of those. And that one, I wanted to be very realistic on the scarf. So I wanted to make sure that, the scarf was done in stitches that would tie correctly around your neck, instead of just doing basket weave throughout and not see that alignment of the scarf. I also did on that one, whipped cream is not, it kind of has a fuzzy appearance to it if you look at it. So a lot of things that I do is I go out and look at stuff that's reality and bring those reality concepts into my painted canvases.
Is that what you try to do in general? Is as much reality as possible?
I try, yes.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because
Yeah. So you.
I saw one earlier today. Somebody had done one of those classic Russian Santa pieces, and just stunning. Absolutely stunning work with all the tassels and fur and everything was so realistic, and you just sit there with your jaw on the floor because of what some people really have a knack for interpreting those canvases and adding dimension and everything to them, and it's so cool when that happens.
And that's kind of what I like to do. I have another one that I've written a stitch guide for that I wanted to add dimension because it was in a field. And so it was like, I want the flowers to come forward in this half, but the flowers to sink back in this in the other on the top side because it was looking off in a distance. So I do research a lot of stuff to make it look real, and make it come alive.
So that tells me then that your thread collection is extensive.
Yes.
Okay.
Nothing wrong
Very
with
much
that.
So. I mean, on the gnome, the witchy gnome, I wanted that beard to be so full and fluffy, but I wanted it to sparkle from the moonlight. And so I used a sparkle, I think it was from Threadworks. It's a sparkle thread that you can use. It was tough to use, but, you know, I hope they, you know, if it ever get, it is being taught later on this year, probably in 2025, that they don't throw rocks at me or something when they're learning it.
Yeah, some of those threads test the patience, no doubt about
yes,
it.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Yep.
So where does this all come from? Do you have an art background or have you just taught yourself through the years?
I have actually taught myself through the years. My art background and creativity actually, I think, is genetically comes from my father. He was an artist and he took a lot of stuff to pen and paper. He was actually a design engineer for his career, but he did a lot of pen and paper and he used to do what they called chalk talks. And so he would draw with chalk and then my mother would interpret it. And in part, the reason why that happened was because my father was totally deaf. And so he did a lot of his expressions through his artwork. And so he and I would work on lots of different art projects and we would draw together all throughout my life. And then my mother loved doing yarn, crocheting, embroidery, you name it. She was doing the sewing stuff. Well, she had a piece of Bargello class. She took a Bargello class and she couldn't figure it out. And I wanted so bad to do it. I can remember it was like oranges. I mean, they were not very nice colors. And she's like, if I can't understand this, you can't. And she threw it away. Well, I picked it up out of the trash can and I finished it. And it was kind of then when everything was like, I like this. And so I did lots of embroidery. So, you know, we do the kits from, you know, the local stores. We had this little shop called the Sundry Shop and you could find anything in there. And so I would pick up these little embroidery kits and stuff and do them. And then I got on the craze of doing all the cross stitching. And then that's when I started to get into the teaching part, is that I was doing so much cross-stitching and teaching people that I was hired by a shop in Ohio for a little bit. And then I was hired out here in Colorado. And then I got on to the decorative stitch counted canvas needlepoint phase. So it's kind of like derived all through life. But yes, the Bargello piece, I don't have it anymore. It's gotten lost in transit, but Bargello's not my favorite, but it got me started.
Yeah. And Bargello's making a comeback. There's somebody that I think it's because it's so usable, you know,
right.
You use the wools or whatever, you know, you can put it on upholstery and then.
Right. And I think it's coming back due to the fact that once you get the pattern down, you can just stitch it. And that's what I'm seeing a lot of in the new generation. They want something to do after they get home from their jobs, but they don't want to have to concentrate on it. So basket weave is actually coming back with those types, that generation. I have a lot of generation millennials that are wanting to do just basket weave, but then again, incorporating one or two decorative stitches once they get a pattern down. So it's been interesting to work with the different generations and what I'm seeing. And Bargello is one of those as well. Because once you get the pattern down, you can make some pretty neat pillows or decorative small little things, which we're seeing as well. They want small. They don't want big projects. They want small projects.
Yeah. And my daughter is that way. She doesn't like. She turns her phone off. If you call her after a certain time, her phone is off because she's like, she wants to disconnect. She just wants that off. So she's not dealing with electronics anymore. And I think that's kind of a trend.
It is. My daughter does the same thing, that after the baby goes to sleep, she doesn't, don't call me. She will leave it on in case of an emergency, but it's don't call me. So,
we finally reached that phase then.
We finally did. And it's a great phase to reach. She actually does crocheting. So she she doesn't like the stitching part, but she's picked up the crocheting, which makes me happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, that's good to hear.
Something.
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's just something with your hands. I think they want to, there's something about making something and having something when you're done with your time rather than just being on a computer or playing a game or whatever.
Right.
So.
Right. Right. Mm. So I'm glad that it's starting to come around that way. You know, I have one stitcher who will tell me, I've been up since, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, or I worked on this till 2 o'clock in the morning after the kids went to bed. I'm like, good for you. not me doing that.
Yeah, I'm in
bed. I used to do that.
Yeah,
it was the only time I had alone. Yeah, it's the only time you had alone.
Well, yes, and I'm not a night owl, so that was really tough. So I did have a break in there when we were raising our children and we were working full time. I didn't get a lot of stitching done back then.
Yeah. Yeah, that phase, I think we all went through that. Yeah.
Yes.
I've been concerned about counted canvas, that it doesn't get the attention I think that it deserves for what you can do with it and for the, to me, it's just fun. Do you see interest in there in counted canvas as much as painted, or?
I see more painted than I do counted.
Okay.
But one thing that I've developed to kind of push the counted canvas piece, and also I think it's a good structure, is if you want to do a painted canvas piece and you have never done anything before, I have a beginning piece, and I didn't share it with you guys, but I have this very simple beginning piece. It starts out with this, like a simple road stitch, where you have to know how to count your canvas threads, and you learn basic stitches. And from there, once you accomplish that, then you can use this as your doodle cloth, and then we will practice other stitches on here for your painted canvas. But you don't want to just jump right into a painted. So I start people off in this beginning counted canvas piece, and it's only like 6x6, but they enjoy doing it. And then they realize the understanding of what you have to do in order to do a painted canvas, because you essentially do have to count in painted canvas. You know, you have a little area and you think it's, you know, enough to put a scotch stitch in, and it's really not. And then you're like, oh, what do I do? So, you know, they learn how to do the counted piece so they can make those decisions down the road.
Yeah. And then there's compensation too. Oh boy. Yeah.
Yes. And I throw the compensation in that in a little bit, and we talk about it. But yes, there's a ton of compensation in a painted canvas. And that's one of the reasons why I move you back to a counted piece. So let's do some compensation here and let's see how that works. And then you take that concept and you move it into a painted canvas concept.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
is it the designing or the teaching that gets your blood flowing?
It's actually both.
Okay.
I look forward to every single class I teach. I look forward to doing what I really enjoy doing is I've done these fall season traditions, and they start out with the season traditions where it's fall, winter, spring, and summer, and it's a graduating class. And to watch them grow from not even knowing how to thread a needle to stitching on luchador paper is just incredible to me. And watching them grow and watching them progress as they go along, and they take the interest is so there. I mean, I've got people calling me, okay, I'm confused on this. Can you help me? And that's one of the things I do is when I teach a class, you have me. You can contact me, you know, not after 7, but you can contact me. You can contact me and I will get back to you with suggestions. I will get back to you with challenging questions so you can help answer those questions as you go along when you have them in other pieces. So I teach and I direct my students as they go along, and, you know, client time and that kind of thing.
Okay. You said some sort of paper. What was that?
Luchador paper. So it's on the summer project, and it's the lettering on the summer project, and it's a fibrous paper that you, I actually used a Copic marker to paint on. They had to paint it, and then they have to anchor it down on the canvas, and then you have to stitch through that canvas and that paper to create the letters for the word summer.
Ooh.
They were not happy. They were like, one of them came up to me. I saw her outside of class and she's like, I can't believe she goes that paper. And I'm like, it's challenging. I'm not going to give you anything that's not.
Now I have to make a note. Lutador, L-U-T-A-D-O-R-E, like it's.
No E on the end. L-U-T-A-D-O-R.
All right.
It's not easy to find. I've used it in a couple of pieces. I did one back, well, it was COVID time, and I got actually introduced to it from one of my EGA groups. They sent this little mailer to us with this lutador, and it was all different colors. And it was like, what can you do with it? And so I put it together, and I did this. I put it on canvas, and I also did quilling, paper quilling, on the canvas as well. And it was hooting together because we were all stuck with, you know, whoever was in our household. So yeah. It was hooting together or something like that. And it was, you have to secure it onto that canvas. I believe Laura Smith uses it maybe in some of her pieces that she's designed. I think I'm not quite sure. I think it's Laura Smith.
So why do you like it? So, I mean, what does it do versus like using something like a suede or?
For one, you can see through the holes. Because if you color it lightly, you can see through the holes. And so you can actually do a fair amount of stitching on it. And I just like thinking outside the box and picking, you know, different things, you know, like on my Beyond the Moon. I mean, I found wood sticks, miniature wood grass, and I use that for my Beyond the Moon, macrame for my dreaming. You know, those are things that I like to think outside the box to try and entice people's attention.
Yeah, that's something I enjoyed about your work is you're not stuck with one technique or one set of threads. You'll try just about anything and
yes.
to express it. Yeah. And dropping in macrame, we just talked to a lady who does macrame and wrote a book, has actually written four books. And then when yours pops up, you know, all right, here we go. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Well, I wanted to do that dream catcher, and I wanted to do something to make those, the spokes of that dream catcher stand out. And it's like, well, what better thing to use, you know? So
yep.
You stiffen the threads, you know, it was a fun class, and you know, they all enjoyed it, and you know, I was intrigued by that.
How did you move from doing your own stitching to design and teaching? Was it an evolution or
it was probably an evolution. I liked stitching. But then I'm like, one of my thoughts was, if I do all this stitching, where am I going to put it? And what am I going to do with it? So I did a lot of thought of, I enjoyed teaching because I had done that previously. And I was actually in a class with Tony Gertis at one time. And I'm like, you know, I think I kind of might have wanted to do this. And so we started talking casually. And then I took another class from her. And I said, you know, I really am serious about looking into this because I want to combine stuff. I want to stitch, but I only have so much wall space and I only have so many people to give stuff away to. And so we started down the path and I got into NAN and I earned my certification through NAN. I was the COVID graduate. I was on my way there. I had everything ready to go. It was everything was shipped there. And I was headed out for the airplane 2 days before NAN started, and they had to cancel. And so I graduated in COVID and we had to do a whole bunch of other stuff to get me to graduate because I couldn't hold a class in person or anything like that. Oh. So
yeah.
It was reinventing the wheel. But I got with Tony and we got going on it, and I It was just something that I knew I wanted to do and take my talents into something that I could earn some income with.
Yeah.
As I move along.
Yeah. So do we then form the business of Mountain Peak Studios? Do you form that right away, or did that then also evolve where I better formalize this at some point?
No, I actually formed it right away. I've owned other businesses before. So my husband had a, back in, right before, the 2000, the incident in New York, the 9/11.
Oh, okay.
Right before that happened, he got laid off. And so he's like, well, the only thing I know to do is to start my own business. And so he was doing his own IT consulting. So we started that business. So I knew that we probably needed to do a business to keep things under another umbrella. I'm also an accountant by trade. So it's like, we better do this so that, you know, we're protected and that we can keep the businesses separate. So I formed it right away. And Mountain Peak Studio is actually derived from a nut from I created but never really did anything with it, Mountain Peaks Crafts. And I used to make candles back in the day. My daughter and I made candles when she was younger because that was something she liked to do, and she liked to help me pour them. And, you know, we were selling those quite a bit. So I made soy candles for a while I knew I couldn't concentrate on the stitching. So I'm one that is always just trying to be innovative, I guess.
Hey, yeah, why not?
Entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good. So why did you go through NAN to do your, is that just a better way to get your teaching?
So it was suggested, I mean, I talked to several people and looking over, you know, looking at the websites on each of the groups, ANG, NAN, and EGA, I felt that NAN was probably the best fit for me. And the way their classes were structured, they met once a year, but you had a mentor throughout the years. And you were able to work with those mentors, and then you would slowly, once you got past your final first counselor, you then went up to the director and assistant director and director for finalization. And that just seemed like a better fit for me than the programs that were being offered at that time with ANG and EGA. So I worked through NAN and had great counselors and great people that supported me and stuff through that whole process.
And for those who don't know, NAN is National Academy of Needle Arts. Still in Michigan, right, at the annual gathering?
Yes. Yeah. They're in Michigan still.
Yeah. And a great lineup. If you go to their website, a great lineup of teachers of all kinds. It's
right. Yeah, it's a good program. And I enjoyed, you know, I knew I couldn't travel a lot. And I knew that I was, well, when I first started it, I was working full time. And then I'm like, I can't do this and work full time. So I actually quit and did all my NAN studies and was trying to get started and stuff in the company and getting the company started. So it seemed like just a really better fit and all the support that I had going through that process.
Scary to quit the full time job to do nothing but needlework?
It was scary. Okay. In part, I was also helping my elderly parents get through, you know, taking them because they were no longer driving. And so I was helping them. So it was that plus, and then I did a small side job at a theater for a while. And then life happened. And then I actually ended up having to go back to work full time for a little bit. And so just back in, was it just June? It was June that I'm like, okay, we're done working full time. Yeah. And I went back to really where I started out 2-3 years ago and was starting to, so now it's starting to come more alive again. And with the help of a stitching shop, because I work out of there and I'm there 2-3, sometimes 4 days a week. And I'm sitting there stitching and doing designing and waiting for clients to come in of, I need help.
Yeah, that's interesting. Now, so a stitching shop, where is that located?
That's located in Denver, Colorado. Okay. So it's in Denver. You know, I'm about 20 miles from it, but I travel up there. I bring all my stuff and I stay up there and I work with them. And if they've got a needlepoint, someone who comes in with needlepoint, it gets directed to me. They try and help, but if they start going into like different types of threads to use, I've got this canvas from 25 years ago, I don't know what to do, then it gets directed to me. And then I work with them for just a little bit to kind of get an idea of where they're what they're wanting. And if I can tell it's going to be longer than just a 10-15 minute conversation, I introduce myself and I let them know that I do consulting on an hourly basis. And I'm willing to help you. I'm willing to work with you. And so I work with them. Those are walk-ins. Then I also do a scheduling of consultations each month for the prior month. And I have people who that stay with me and they want to have private consultations. And so they pay by the hour and it works great because they get the one-on-one. I get, I get to help them. I design stitch diagrams for them on certain pieces if they're wanting them. And, it's a win-win. And we get to play in thread world, right? They have, they have so many threads there.
Now the part that really matters. This is
right. We get to play in the thread world and then we get to go look at trunk shows.
Yeah, that would be fun. So do you ever have hold a canvas class there where you have a canvas that, or several canvases people pick and then you do a all afternoon class?
So I have some that I have posted so I stitch canvases painted and counted and I hold classes there. My classes are not all day either because I find that when you're working with, most of the clientele, when you're working with them about at the 5-6 hour mark, they're just like, what? So I break mine up and I do, typically I only do Sunday afternoons and it's typically a 4-6 hour block. And then it usually ends up being a 2 Sunday a month. And so then there's a Sunday in between. So then they can work on, because they will have homework. They work on their homework. And then they come back the following Sunday and we finish out the class. So I teach those classes up there. We also are introducing something in 2025 that bring your canvas and I'll help you. So they can bring anything they want, counted, painted, and it's limited size. And if they have I don't want to stitch here, but I don't know what to do. And then, I'll work with them to try and get them a stitch that they want to do. I may have to do a stitch diagram and get it to them, but we're setting that up as well come 2025.
What a great challenge for you though. That's got to be so much fun. Mm-hmm. You'd never know what's going to hit you.
Never know.
Wow.
Never know. And so, yes, it does get to be challenging, but it's fun and I enjoy it. And I love working with individuals and in thinking outside the box on things and working with, groups of ladies that are like that too. I have one whole group that is just phenomenal and they'll, they like it so much and they've enjoyed the classes so much. They've now done memberships to the national organizations, which is something everybody's wanting. So, it's a win-win for everyone. And yes, it is it is challenging, but it keeps me out of trouble and I really enjoy doing it.
Okay. How long after a session, when you're ready to go home, how long does it take to put all the threads back? It's gotta be, I can just see them piled up on the side. Yeah.
Well, so there's this little basket that I can put the threads in at a stitching shop that says, go back to inventory. And the girls in the shop work well with me and they will put them away for me. Ooh. So they are so, all of them there are so supportive and so helpful when I'm trying to do something with someone that they will work with me on, giving me the space. Like sometimes if I have more, we've had problems where there've been some scheduling issues where people have thought they were supposed to be there and they weren't. So we put people in separate rooms and, they've been really good about that. So I don't put any of the threads away. So the answer to that question is nada.
Wow.
Nice.
Minions. Minions.
Yeah, it is. It is really nice. If I am playing with threads, I don't know. Have you ever taken a look at their, I mean, their store is just phenomenal.
No.
They have, it's just rows and rows. I mean, it's a whole line, every line you can think of. So it's an incredible store to look at.
Yeah. I do know like ANG sometimes, or Cyber Pointers, I think they get their threads from them if they're kitting up a class.
Yes.
Sometimes they kit with them.
Yes.
So they must have a phenomenal range.
I actually do a lot of, I do all my kitting through them as well, because it's something that I don't like to really do kitting as much. And so I would rather be designing and teaching and enjoying growing people to, you know, needlepoint stature, or, you know, experts, or, you know, getting them to where they're happy at, than to kit. And so they do all of my kitting. I don't kit anything. And yes, I may be cutting myself in the foot money wise, but I would rather have, I'd rather my clients be happy, and I'd rather them get a and they put together really good kits. And I would rather spend my time on making clients and students and people happy in doing something they want to either start back up or learn how to do.
Right. Yeah. And the inventory you'd have to keep too.
Right.
To have a kit right. ready, you know.
Right. And I don't have the space in my house. I've already overflowed into the spare bedroom, and my husband's like, you can't go any further.
it gets so involved because you're mm-hmm. ordering, and this thread didn't come in, and I need it for a class, and it's, yeah, the pressure all gets eliminated when you don't have to worry about that. So,
right.
Yeah.
It's one stress I don't like to have. And so I eliminated it.
What a great program they have, and great for you. So you must have some regulars who you work with for, yeah.
Yeah. I have regulars that I've worked with, and I'm still building clientele. I have surpassed my goal double from what I thought I would do, because I really started to, I mean, I was dabbling and I was doing classes there for the last couple of years, but doing the client and the one-on-one consulting really just started in June when I was able to quit full time. And I have doubled my goal expectations, you know, since then. I had this goal, and it's like way doubled by the end of December.
Boy.
And it's not even end of December yet. So
that's fantastic. So,
pretty exciting. Yep.
So how much of this work then, it's got to inspire your own designs. You must mm-hmm. come away with all kinds of ideas. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I come away with all kinds of ideas, and, you know, working on designs all the time. Between painted canvas stitch guides and stitching them, and I stitch them. If I have the opportunity to stitch them, I will. Some things are long distance, and they send me something, or they send me, you know, a picture and say I need a stitch guide. Those obviously I can't do. But if I'm going to present it into a class, I will do the stitch guide, and I will do the stitching as it comes along.
Man, so, I'll tell you what a great time. To go into a shop and just let it happen to you. That's so much fun. Yeah.
Yep. It was a great opportunity for me, and a great opportunity for the stitching shop, because they were wanting someone to do something similar to this. And, you know, it was just like, we both looked at each other and said, well, let's try. And so we did.
Yeah. So now that you're all done working for somebody's corporate, whatever,
Yes.
Do you structure your day?
Yes.
I mean, do you try to, because you got the administrative part, I'm sure, and ordering and all manner of things, but do you carve out time every day for design work?
Oh, yes. I design work every day, stitch work every day. You know, my calendar is full, and I've actually had to start putting myself home stitching day, you know, on my calendar so I can get stuff done. So yes, I do structure my days, and I live by my calendar, and, if I'm not home having to do administrative and concentration on stitching, then I wait and I structure my day. You know, I do a lot of stitching in the mornings before I go to the stitching shop. I stay there in time, you know, through mid afternoon, and then I come home and I do more stitching or more administrative work. So yes, I have a very structured day, even though, you know, I didn't think I would have that structure, a lot of that structure, but you have to in order to do what I'm doing at this point.
But now, all right, so then I remember when my wife and I first started working at home, because we worked on a trade magazine together, and it got out of control to the point where we sat down one Friday and said, all right, we cannot continue to work 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. We have to stop this at some point late afternoon, and we can't do it on weekends, because it just got out of control, because it was always there.
Right.
And so how do you deal with that? Do you cut yourself off?
Yes. Okay. So I do cut myself off. Usually I'm cutting myself off around the 7 or 8 o'clock hour. And then that's when my husband and I, you know, spend evenings together. We try not to do anything unless it's together through the evenings. I try and leave, you know, at least one or two weekends or weekend days that I can spend with my daughter and my granddaughter and my husband. I generally try and structure my day, getting up around like 6:30 in the morning and ending, you know, anywhere between 5 and 6 o'clock at night, and then not doing a lot of stitching at night. But if I'm under a gun, then I go ahead. If I'm under a deadline, I go ahead and work some. My husband works all the time, and he has IT stuff that he has to do in the evenings because he works with a lot of offshore people. Oh. So we get our time in. The other thing that we do is in the summertime, we make sure that we're gone about every other weekend. Mm. And we go to, we have a place that we go to in the mountains about every other weekend. And we go there and we just check out and we don't do anything. Will I bring stitching along? Yes. But am I doing personal fun stuff for me and not designing and preparing classes? Normally, yes. Just to kind of give my head a rest a little bit.
So personal stitching then still gives you that escape, that chance to reset. Okay.
Yeah. And if I do decide to stitch at night, it's personal stitching. You know, something fun, something simple, you know, just a personal stitching type piece.
Okay. Because for some people, if you do that all day, then the last thing you want to touch would be stitching at night of any kind. And yet that can be the best way to unwind.
Yes. And that's what I do. And I do read some, but most of the time I will stitch at night if I feel like I want to do a stitching at night. And there's one of the groups in town that meets at night. And so I will often go to their group and unwind and do some open stitching with them.
Hmm. Wow. Sounds like a nice life you've carved out. You win.
I'm liking my life right now. We had this conversation. I think you contacted me about a year ago, and I was like, I'm not at a point right now to be doing that. And it was because my life was, you know, working full time and had all kinds of other personal stuff going on that I was just like, this is not a good time.
Yeah.
Now this is the best time ever.
Now, how much
living the dream.
Yeah, how much teaching are you doing for NAN and ANG and EGA? Are you trying to be in at least their national seminars every year?
Yes. So I submitted. Well, I did Tucson, and that was my first one that I have ever taught at. And when I submitted Dreaming Beyond the Moon and Desert Rose, and I'm like, if I get one, I get one. You know, I really thought that I would probably not get any of them. When they called me and they said, you've been picked up for all.
Oh, boy.
And you're working, you're doing all 10 days. I'm like, are you kidding me? And they're like, nope, you've got all the classes. Whoa. So that was icing on the cake. Like, yes, I've made it. And then I didn't submit the following year. this 2026 is when I'm going to be able to submit again. And I submitted, I'm getting ready to do proposals for 26. I'm not teaching in 25 either, because I life got in the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, and that's the thing. I think people don't always appreciate how far in advance those things have to be done.
Oh, I know. Yeah. 18 months. We were talking to relatives last night, and they're like, well, that seems like a long way away. I'm like, yes, it is. But you have to get it. That you have to be thinking that far in advance.
Right.
And if something comes up, you know, with you know, life, you kind of have to put that on the back burner a little bit to deal with the life situations that are going on.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Oh, boy.
Yeah. And the threads, and I know they're still having issues like kitting up and things like that. I know you're not kitting up yourself, but still, you know, being able to make substitutions or whatever, you know, that's another huge big deal that goes along with those.
Right, because
you classes.
Right, because you can submit something, you know, 2 years, 18 months in advance, and, you know, who knows if the following year, you know, somebody's going to buy out somebody else, and then you end up having a problem. So you just never know. And so you have to be aware of that when you're actually designing for, you know, an ANG to, or an EGA, to hope that, you know, the threads you choose, you're pretty sure are not going to go away. I had a couple that had been discontinued, and so we had to replace them. So yeah, it gets to be challenging.
Yeah. Never bored. Never bored.
Never.
All right. Now here we are already. We're going to run out of time. Got to hear the story about Beyond the Moon, that design, and then absolutely have to hear about the Lost Samplers lecture. Just the little bit you have on your website about the Lost Samplers. Yeah. What is that whole story?
So I will tell you that is semi-retired now. The program has been discontinued because it started right after we started it, and then we came into COVID. So my husband's family owned the oldest bed and breakfast in the country, and it's on the National Highway in Pennsylvania. And so he had some, you know, some ties to it, and he's like, Jeanette, I want to go. And I'm like, okay. Well, we found out that my father actually grew up 30 miles from there. Had no idea. And then we started putting all the pieces together. So we went there, and we stayed in Andrew Jackson's room. So the history of the inn is that Abraham Lincoln would often travel there to go get breakfast, like kind of what they call camp, you know, similar to Camp David now, but he would often travel there, and he would get breakfast there, and he would actually meet people there. And so Abraham Lincoln's been there. Andrew Jackson's been there. It was the Whiskey Rebellion was present there as well. And my husband had been there once before. And so we went back in, beautiful place, all made of stone, beautiful gardens. It was just incredible. And we go in, and we're walking in the door, and we go into the dining room area, and there's all these samplers on the wall. And I'm just like, oh my gosh. I mean, there must have been, I know there's probably a couple dozen at least, if not more. And we asked if we could take pictures. They knew who we were, and we got to take pictures of all these samplers.
Oh,
and they had been given to them over time. And so it was samplers that people had picked up that had, you know, had been there, had given them the samplers, you know, estate sales. And then the owner actually was doing some stitching as well. And so she had several. So we took the pictures. We stayed in the inn. It was kind of fun, but you know, they did say it was a little haunted. We never had any hauntings, we stayed in the room that Andrew Jackson would stay in. So we stayed there, and there's a stoop in the middle of going from the kitchen to the dining room. And my husband's like, I remember sitting on the stoop. And the stoop is so worn. I mean, it has a divot in it. It's so worn. And it's like, to think, you know, Abraham Lincoln went over it, Andrew Jackson walked over it. All these people that we know from history went through this place. So it was, we went and took all the pictures. We brought them home, and that was it. And so then I'm thinking, I need to do a lecture, and it was part of my NAN certification to do a lecture. And I'm like, okay, I want to think outside the box. So I'm going to incorporate this history that we have, and we're going to do this Pennsylvania trip. So I started off in the history that we actually got in my Volkswagen Beetle convertible, and we drove from here to Pennsylvania. And we talked about the stay and stuff. And the tragic that happened was, for some reason, you know, it was a sign. We were there in July. I think it was June or July. And in August, the place burnt down. It was stone building. So the stone remained, but all the inside was gone. The owner was upstairs because she stayed there. She was upstairs. Her son just happened to come by to check on something and saw that it was in flames, got her out. They grabbed the Whiskey Rebellion flag. It's the one and only Whiskey Rebellion flag to this date that's known of, that the Smithsonian lets them keep. And then if anything were to happen, it goes back to the Smithsonian. But it has remained on the premises this whole time. So they grabbed that, and all the samplers were gone. And so it was, so then it morphed into, well, let's research all of these samplers that we had. We are the only ones that have pictures of all these samplers. So we went in and did some genealogy and learned, you know, about some of the girls that were that did the samplers. They were mostly done by girls in early days, you know, trying to get their suitors and, you know, learning their alphabets and stuff. So we learned quite a bit about all of the different samplers. Well, I contacted her and I said, I'd like to try and recreate these. And she goes, yes, that would be great. Well, when we started doing it, it was right before COVID. I mean, it was probably 6 to 9 months before COVID. And I had people on board trying to help me with it. And then COVID shut down, and then it just kind of went to the wayside. I do stay in contact with her. She rebuilt, an architect firm out of Pennsylvania rebuilt it back to what it looks like now, and they're open. And we want to go back. We haven't been there in a very long time since then. And we want to go back and see everything. She has now since made a new collection. So she has a new collection of samplers and stuff. So I'd like to see those and see what they're like. But yeah, it was an incredible trip. And to know that my dad grew up right down the, you know, 30 miles in the next town down was amazing. And one of the things that we came upon this other couple that was there that had gotten married there. And we started talking, and he said, I know your dad. I remember your dad. Your dad and I used to play together. And it was always a treat going to where my dad, that side of my family had a general store, and they were the owners of it. So it was like, it was always a treat to go to the general store because they would sit around and talk. My dad and your dad, or, you know, your grandfather and my dad would sit around and talk. And I remember your dad, and we would go off and play. So it was just a really fun thing to do. And then once the samplers were gone, we knew we had to do something to preserve it. So I've done the lecture 4 or 5 times, and it's always just, everyone's loved it. But it's with the project being gone, it's kind of something that I haven't really pursued lately.
Yeah. What a story. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah.
And then Beyond the Moon is similar. Clyde Tombaugh is a distant relative of my husband's. And so he grew up most of his adult life in Las Cruces, New Mexico. And so I knew I wanted to do a Southwestern piece. I knew I wanted to do something with mixed media. So the girl is actually 3D. The girl's dress is stitched on a 20-count Congress cloth and then applique on the piece. And I knew I wanted to have adobes in it and stuff. And then just wanted to say Beyond the Moon, and there was Pluto. And so that's how that one came about, and all the different threads. And actually most of the threads I used in that one, I believe, were Weeks dye threads. And I did a lot of mixing of Weeks dye threads to come up with a lot of the different coloring in that one.
Wow. So neat, man. What a history in your family. Oh boy.
Yeah. Yes. It's really a cool history. So I enjoy doing that piece. I also to make it look distant and in the darkness a little bit, I actually did some Copic marker coloring on it as well, on that piece. Yeah. So yes, and his ashes are on that space station that went to Pluto. Yep.
Yeah, I didn't know. That was the fascinating part, is that I didn't know that they'd put a portion of his ashes on that Explorer,
yes,
whatever it was called. Probably not, because if I wrote it down, that means I thought ahead, yeah, which I didn't.
So, oh, well. Yeah. Oh, yes, part of his ashes are on that ship, and it was a fun piece to do and to have the creativity come out on that one.
Yeah, but beautiful.
I wanted to represent his adult life in Las Cruces. And when you go down there, they've got, you know, the Tombaugh Elementary School, and they've got a church that has all the stained glass, which it depicts his history with developing the telescope and developing, you know, that was the telescope that he discovered Pluto, and it has all of his history in the stained glasses in this church. And there's a planetarium, the Tombaugh Planetarium, down there. So it's kind of a fun place to go.
Boy, that's neat stuff. Yep. So what lies ahead for you now? Do we have, you're at the stitching shop, but then do you also have your own classes that you're teaching?
So yes, all my classes go through the stitching shop at this point in time, but that does not leave me to say no to anything else. I have made quite a bit of contacts at ANG this past year. I'm hoping to do some Zoom classes. Everything we do, I do, is offered through Zoom as well. So I'm hoping to expand my classes and teaching, and you know, I'm not opposed to traveling, but a lot of my stuff is done here in Colorado. The plan is 2025 is really planned out. There's some little holes in there, but a lot of teaching. I'm teaching almost, if I'm not teaching every other weekend, I'm doing, you know, a couple of different types of classes, or I need help classes is what we're calling them, that you can come in and work with me on a one-on-one and consulting. So for right now, I'm doing that, and I'm preparing for ANG 2026, which is going to be here in Colorado.
Yeah. Wow. What a shift and into full gear right away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it's been a busy road the last 6 months, 5 months, but it's been a great road. Yeah. And I would not do anything differently at this point.
That's fantastic. Bravo for you. That's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, Jeanette. We sure. What fun. Now I want to go to the stitching shop and hang out.
You need to play with threads.
Yeah, you need to come visit. There are people that will actually travel to come to the stitching shop and see what they have. It's just phenomenal.
Yeah.
Thread selections they have.
Yeah. Well, it's great. All right, Jeanette, enjoyed it. Thank you.
All righty. It was nice talking with you guys. I had a great time.
Yep. And thanks to everyone for listening.